I do not watch porn, but I feel like I still know what happens in it because of the things that people try on me. That is the real trickle-down economics. My field research suggests that choking is very popular in pornography right now. It's very choky out there. You can't choke a woman on a first date. We need to be already positive that you're not gonna kill us for real. I also feel like it's weird when it's like coming from a genuine place, you know? Like, I don't wanna be choked from the heart. If a guy is slapping me in the face with his dick, I need to know that he's doing it ironically. I feel...
Well, Kate Willett, thanks for talking to me. You have a 15-minute stand-up set in the new season of The Comedy Lineup on Netflix, and I felt like I had a pretty good secondhand understanding of how Tinder works. I've been married since before there was a Tinder, and so I've never used the app, but now I feel like I really don't understand it. Are you seeing dicks when you swipe left and right? Is that how it works now?
No, it's more like people will send you pictures of them. I don't know if you can even send pictures within the Tinder app, but then once you start like texting with people, then you'll get random dick pics. Or there was this one guy that was a foot fetishist and he kept sending me pictures of his feet, which I guess in some ways was not as bad, but you know, that was kind of gross too.
So what is the, are these unsolicited? So like you like match with somebody and then you send them a text that says, hey, you want to hang out sometime? Is that how that works?
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like, yeah, if you're sending like maybe flirty texts back and forth that they'll just send a dick in there. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to ask is like, what's the lead up for that? Is it like, hey, you want to meet at like Starbucks sometime? There's the one in, sort of in my neighborhood. And also, here's my dick.
I'm trying to think. I guess most of the times when that's happened to me, there has been something like vaguely sexual. Like first, they'll be like, oh, you're hot. And, you know, I'll be like, thank you. I think you're cute too or something. And then the dick. Like that there's maybe a slight level of sexuality or something. I have gotten just random ones. I have gotten like just high and then a dick. That's definitely happened. But I feel like a lot of the time it's like it's flirty, but then that's kind of taking it a step too far from where you want it to be, you know?
Do you feel like this is how most people in your demographic meet each other now? I mean, this is totally foreign to me from... I mean, I haven't dated in, you know, 20 years, so I just don't really have any concept of what it's like out there.
I don't know. I guess so, maybe. I mean, most of the people I know have done online dating, but then ultimately met their partners in real life or through friends. And I know that I've done a lot of online dating, but then I think that in all but one case, the person that I actually ended up like having a relationship with was from real life. But I do think that most people have done some kind of online dating, whether or not it like leads to a serious relationship or something.
But that's interesting that you say most of the people you talk to that do online dating wind up meeting somebody they get serious about in the real world. Because I get a sense from this stand-up and from a few clips of things that I've seen you on that you're kind of dissatisfied with the experience. And I wonder if that's a selection phenomenon, that it's not that all guys are turds, it's that all guys on these apps are turds.
Yeah, I don't even think it's that all guys are turds or even all guys on the app. I just think that, you know, I mean, it's hard to find someone that's like a person you're really compatible with, that's very like well-adjusted and kind in general. Like, that's just a tough thing to find. But then I also think that there's so much misogyny steeped into our culture that in order for a guy to be a person that really respects women and, you know, knows in his deepest soul that we're equal, it's like that's a guy that's either very thoughtful and has done some thinking or somebody who was just raised super, super right, you know? And I think that, I mean, it's like, it's not a rare thing for a guy to have some casual misogyny. That's pretty much everyone. I mean, that's women too, since it's just such a big thing in our culture. And I think it comes out in weird ways in dating. And it's a thing that I've made fun of a lot in my stand-up. But I mean, I definitely think that there are wonderful men, and I know many of them. I'm close friends with many wonderful men, and I'm dating one. And yeah, it's not like you can't find people that are really great.
The misogyny part of that is interesting, because the clip I played at the beginning is from the Netflix special about you not watching porn, but gathering from men you've been with that choking must be very popular on porn. And I can't imagine that's anything but a sort of misogynistic display, right? I mean, that's like a power thing, or I get off on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, I think it's about intention in some ways, because I definitely know people that are really into BDSM and like really do want to, you know, do these things, which I think on the outside look violent, but then, you know, between the two people, they're really enjoying it. And there's definitely like sex like that and porn like that. But I also think that, at least in the limited amount of porn I've seen and the kind that I know some of my my friends and close people have watched, is I do think that there is like an underlying misogyny to the kind of like violence or degradation that you would see in there. I mean, even though I don't think that like every couple who does that stuff is, you know, has some kind of deeper issue or anything like that. But, you know, I do think that you see that a lot in porn. Yeah.
Do you carry the bit about bad dating experiences in your stand-up, even if you're dating somebody and it's going much better than sort of the way you've talked about on stage? Or is that not as funny?
I don't know. I mean, so I've been dating someone for like 2 months, and I guess in that 2 months I've written a lot of stuff that's not about dating. Like I'm working on a new bit about my parents' relationship right now. And I'm also working a bit about incels. I don't know if you know what an incel is, but they're like guys who are really mad that no one wants to have sex with them on the internet, and they're doing and saying all this really misogynistic stuff. And writing a bit about that. And I guess when I wrote that bit about reproductive rights, I was in a relationship. Same thing with the glass gutter one. So I would say that I generate bits that are like still on the similar themes, you know, like, similar themes, misogyny, disappointment, just, I don't know, stuff like that, but maybe from a, like a different angle versus like, you know, this sucks, or I had bad sex with a guy or something like that. But I mean, I don't throw away jokes like, you know, all the time, if I really, really like them, especially because I was working on them for this Netflix special. But I guess it would be weird, like, if I was in a really long-term relationship with a guy and it was, or woman, and it was going well, then maybe I would have non-material about, you know, dating, even if I still like those jokes. I don't know. We'll see. It's a good question. I like to feel pretty authentic on stage, and it's not a thing that's really come up yet, because I haven't been in a super long relationship since I started stand-up, but I am kind of curious to what the answer to that question is. You know, I'll find out, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, Louis C.K. has been in the news this week, and I'm curious whether that's going to work its way into people's routines. I mean, is it something that you think you would mention in your stand-up?
No, not Louis C.K. specifically, but it's funny that you asked me about that, because that bit about people taking their dicks out, you know, that is something that's happened to me. But I think that when I wrote that bit, it was like right after Louis C.K. Where it was published in the New York Times and stuff. And I think that that event did make me think about how many times that's happened to me and what it was actually like to be on the other end of it. So it kind of already has, but I don't think that I'll have a bit about Louis C.K. in particular, or that many comics will, just because it's so topical and timely. You know, like, there'll be some new guy taking out a stick next week, unfortunately, you know, so.
Well, in the routine, it comes up in the context not of like exhibitionism or a guy sort of having a thrill, you know, like a the surprise factor or whatever. It was more of a response to rejection. The one that you mentioned in the stand up, is that how it more commonly comes up?
Yeah, I think that. Oh, what a good question. I think that there's
because it was like, you would reject me? Have you seen this dick? Would you like to see it? Let me take it out and show it to you.
Oh man, it's so upsetting to put it like that. I mean, putting it anyway, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, I've had a few guys, a couple guys show me their dicks in person because it was like they were trying to escalate the sexual interaction in a way that I wasn't on board for. And then we kind of already talked about the phone dick pic thing. But I do think that there is kind of this fundamental thing that underlies all these instances, which is that a lot of guys just feel okay showing their dicks to people. You know, it doesn't really matter what the reason is. Like, if the guy gets off on some weird humiliation, or, you know, if it's like a way of trying to force women to do something sexual that she doesn't want to do. I mean, it's all, I think, underlied by this really intense sense of entitlement and also a desire for power, I think, a little bit, you know, because I don't know if I said this in the special, but sometimes when I tell this joke on stage, I'll talk about how I don't have the urge to take my genitals out and show them to people. I really don't. And I don't know that many women in my life who do or have really would ever consider that. And I just think that there's this weird entitlement and power component that you just don't really see the reverse of that situation a ton, you know?
Is the reason for this kind of humor to normalize that women can act like men, or to normalize sex in dating? Is it about normalizing, or is it about something else?
My stand-up in general?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's about normalizing anything. I think for me, I try to write jokes that, you know, are just kind of express the stuff that I feel upset about, which is a lot of the time, this like kind of, you know, misogyny, weird sort of sexual frustration and angst. And I don't know, it's just kind of like whatever wants to come out of me. And then I feel like if I'm really honest about that, it's relatable to people, you know, because a lot of women and men have had similar experiences. And I think that there's like a level of honesty where people just relate to each other, even if they haven't had the exact same experience. But yeah, I don't know if it's really like so goal oriented for me, unless I'm really trying to get a point across, like in the one about birth control and abortion and how that's an issue for guys too. That wasn't a thing that I really wanted men to understand, even if it was in kind of a silly way.
Do you see other women in comedy having the same approach that you do to jokes about sex, or are there other people you would think about and say, no, she takes a completely different sort of she has a completely different reason for talking about this than I do, or a completely different way of talking about it than I do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that there's many ways of a woman talking about sex in comedy as there are women in comedy. But I also think that there's a couple different ways that you can talk about sex. There's a way that you can talk about it where you're the protagonist in the situation. And then there's a way that's kind of inviting people to view you as a sexual object. And either one of those energies or approaches can be fun to play with. Like, there's definitely times where you can do something fun and interesting artistically by kind of being the person that people are like projecting their sexual energy onto. I think that the second one, where like it's about being sexy specifically to men, that is, I think, the approach to sexuality that a lot of female comics have been pressured to have, and one where you see the majority of female comics have had success. But I think that it's changing. And I don't think that one is more valid than the other artistically, but I think that there's starting to be more room for women in stand-up to really be the protagonist than their sexual encounter.
Well, that seems, the sort of sex kitten approach seems less relatable in 2018 than the sort of normal person talking to another normal person about this thing that happened and the other person finding it funny because they see some relatability between the two of you. That seems more what you're doing than the other.
I think so. That's definitely what I'm trying to do. I mean, I feel like my whole life I really had this pressure to be pretty or sexy or sort of fit into a narrow standard of what men find desirable. And I think for me, it's always been an obsession of like, what is sexuality like for me, like as a human being, like not what does, you know, some guy or like general patriarchal society want it to be. It's like, what do I want? How do I feel? And there, that's an area where like, I think I've been really repressed and that most women have. So it's a fun topic to explore and I keep coming back to it. But I think that, but it's also, I don't know. It's also fun, I think, to play with expectations. And I sometimes will do like pretty sexual act outs of my bits and stuff like that. And I know that like whatever dude is gonna be like looking at that through, you know, the lens of sexuality to a certain degree. And I think that that's funny to do and also make people listen to smart ideas that I care about at the same time, because I think that like there's this collective fantasy that women cannot be sexual and intelligent at the same time. I mean, and that's so dumb. And I sometimes really like to play in that area of being both things at once.
This is season two of the comedy lineup. I think they were all taped in one festival or one event, right?
Yeah.
And I think I've seen all but one of the first season, and I've been watching through a couple of these today and thinking about the sort of the 15-minute stand-up as a form seems a lot better than like a 5-minute set you see somebody do on Conan, which is basically you almost have to time it. I mean, it's almost getting in and getting out of a single joke versus 15 minutes, which is more of like a segment of a typical 1 hour or half hour or 1 hour routine. Is that how it worked out? I mean, did it work out more comfortably than like a late night segment?
Yeah. And I think that there are some forms of stand-up that are a lot more conducive to late night. I have some friends who are brilliant joke writers, and what they're doing in their stand-up is just showcasing these perfectly crafted jokes, sometimes one-liners or sometimes like bits, but you know, it's more like sort of in each joke is a little individual package. But I think if you're a stand-up that has a lot of longer stories or has a lot of kind of complicated ideas that you're trying to get across, like 15 minutes is such a better amount of time to try to do that than 4 minutes. You're completely right. So it's good that I think some of the stand-ups that wouldn't necessarily be like a really obvious fit for doing what they do in late night can get a chance to do that here. Even though I'm sure that like anybody who did the comedy lineup could do an amazing late night set. It's just fun to get to see people in a longer format really doing what they do.
I really liked Ian Carmel in the first season. I think I had heard his name before, but had never seen him before. And I know timing is an overused word in comedy, but he had such odd pauses between speaking, and the way he ends his routine is basically a timing bit. And I mean, is that something that's happening in comedy right now? I don't know that I've seen anybody quite like him before.
Well, Ian is a really unique and special comedian, but I do think you see comics doing all sorts of interesting things with performance that kind of come from the fact that not all of comedy is happening in comedy clubs anymore. Like, there's so many bars and theaters, and just comedians are coming up through like a totally, totally different track sometimes than standard comedy clubs. And you know, it kind of gives a little more creative freedom. I will say about Ian is that Ian is a person that could do what he's doing anywhere. So you know, comedy club, theater. Ian's could crush it anywhere. But I think that the variety of venues and environments has kind of allowed comedy to develop in ways that it wouldn't if it was just all in a comedy club.
Are the group of people that are in this comedy lineup series people you run into over and over again? I mean, are you kind of in a demographic sort of similar age, similar points in your career that you're at a lot of the same festivals and a lot of the same shows?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely, I knew almost all of these people before and had worked with them before, whether it's at a little bar show in Brooklyn or at a comedy festival. Yeah, there was no one I was really meeting for the first time in this situation.
Because I'm curious how, and maybe you've had been able to talk to some of these people that were from the first season, but I feel like Ali Wong came out of nowhere. I mean, I did not know who she was other than as a, you know, a writer on Fresh Off the Boat. And I don't think she was really well known, you know, sort of outside of the industry. And then all of a sudden she's a huge star because of the Netflix special. And what has the response been from, you know, people like Taylor Tomlinson, Sam Jay? I mean, have many of these people said, you know, yeah, things have changed since these episodes went up?
The only person I've actually talked to about this is Sam Jay, and she said, yeah, that she feels like stuff has changed for her a lot. I just talked to her about that the other night, but I haven't asked anyone else. I think maybe part of it is because I haven't wanted to know the answer to that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, let's see, you know, so, yeah.
What is your life basically right now? Are you traveling a lot doing stand-up? Are you writing on a show? What are you doing?
Right now, I'm mostly just touring as a stand-up and doing lots of stand-up. I'm working on some of my own writing projects, but I'm not officially writing for a show right now. And part of that is because I love doing stand-up. I love to be able to go perform in different cities all the time.
Do you see most people having that attitude now? I wonder, I mean, I see a lot of people come out of writers' rooms and do a little stand-up and then go back into writers' rooms. And I've talked to Joe Mandy about this before. It's like, which part of the job is it that you really want to do? I mean, do you want to write? Do you want to be on a TV show? Do you want to, because I see the stand-up part as also coming with a lot of travel and a lot of late nights and a lot of spending time by yourself and things that might not be what you want long-term.
Yeah, I don't know. I love acting and I love writing and I love writing stuff for myself too, like show ideas that I have, as well as working on other people's projects. I love all that stuff for real. But I think that the thing that I'll love the most always will be stand up. I just love it. I love performing in front of a live audience. I love making people laugh. I love the travel. I love the loneliness and the weird late nights. It's like, it just all sort of works for me. And I'll definitely do other things and love other things. But this is like my one true love, I think.
So you actually like the solo journey part of it?
Yeah, I really do. I don't know. I love my friends and I love spending time with people. I'm extremely extroverted, but there is kind of a weird loner nature that I have that is just like perfectly matched with stand-up as a job.
Is there much of a prevailing theory among people in the comedy business you've talked to about why Netflix didn't renew Michelle Wolf's show? I was very, very surprised. I could not have imagined that show was not going to go past the initial order.
I have no idea. I was definitely really, really bummed out to hear that. It was super disappointing because Michelle Wolf is amazing, but I don't have any inside information about that at all.
Because I see, you know, I turn on Netflix and, you know, on a Tuesday or a Friday, and there's like a new comedy special I haven't seen, or there's a new, you know, Natasha and Moshi did their, you know, little triple episodes. I mean, there's always so much coming that I can't even keep up with it. And then you have this thing where, you know, it's going to be weekly episodes. And I wonder if, like, if people couldn't find it or they just didn't understand how to make Netflix like a weekly part of their routine. I mean, how do you watch Netflix?
I would say that if I watch Netflix, it's usually to like binge on something, you know, like to watch, like I watched like during Christmas week, every episode of Black Mirror, which was like such a weird thing to do. I just really wanted to dive into the holiday depression. So yeah, when I get on Netflix, it usually isn't like for an every week thing. It's usually like to binge something all at once. And I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but well, you know, she's awesome.
I hope Netflix can figure it out, because I like the idea of not even just late night, but just like a weekly TV show that, you know, that all 10 episodes don't come out the same day, that there's a little bit of breathing room where, you know, people can talk about it, or you can catch up, or, you know, there's a little bit of discussion between episodes. I feel like when these things come out, people talk about them for 3 or 4 days, and then it's, you know, then there's something else.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about Netflix, you know, in regards to comedy stuff is people just keep finding it all the time. You know, it's not like everyone's going to watch it today or something like that. It just sort of lives on there, and people, when they are bored or looking for something to watch, you know, will stumble on it, I think. I know that, like, for me, that's how I am about comedy specials.
Well, I appreciate you talking to me. I enjoyed the set. And what are you doing next? Are you just basically from city to city right now?
So I have a few exciting things coming up. I am at the Bumper Street Festival in Seattle right now. And then I am going to be at the Red Clay Comedy Festival in Atlanta, Janine Garofalo, the last weekend of September, and also in North Carolina. And then in San Francisco, I'm very excited to be opening for the band Jawbreaker at the Fillmore on October 23rd. It's so much fun to work with those guys. So yeah, a lot of tour dates. I think they're all on my calendar right now, and I will keep you posted.
That's fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you talking to me, and I hope to talk to you again sometime.
Yeah, thank you. Really interesting conversation. Great luck with the podcast.
All right. Thanks a lot.